RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and we got a good one today. We're going to be talking about whether or not made in America products are superior to non-made in America products, right? And I want to put patriotism for a side. Because in all truthfulness, if I can and when I can, I try to buy American-made products, right? Absolutely love brands like Wasp Archery, Vapor Trail, right? Those two brands, a majority of their products, I'm not sure if all of them, but a majority of their products are made in the United States. And so I absolutely love it. And am willing to pay a little bit extra for Made in America products. Now, when it comes to really big purchases where the price differential is much greater than that of a non-Made in America product, and the quality is somewhat similar, maybe I know about the material that's used, maybe I don't as far as where it's sourced from, I do both. I buy American-made and I buy non-American-made. I'll be a perfect example is my Western Mountaineering sleeping bag. All right. That sleeping bag is made in America and it costs $650+ for the sleeping bag that I bought. That is a huge expense. And to be honest with you, to this day, it is the most expensive outside of my bow. Okay. Outside of a bow, it is the most expensive purchase that I have made when it comes to buying a piece of gear specifically for hunting. Now, the best thing about that sleeping bag is there is there's overlap of where and when I can use it. But long story short, I'm going to say that, and based off of the people that I talk to, some of these products are going to last as long as you have them, right? And so quality, the amount of time you own it, the shelf life, like there's so much that's going to get talked about in today's episode. And I brought it up because of the election, a little bit of the election. I thought maybe now would be a good time to talk about this, talk a little bit about, back in the day, I would say China products were garbage. But as technology has evolved and it's gotten better and better, I think they've probably caught up to United States manufacturing and as far as quality is concerned. So it's really hard to tell the difference now between a high quality product and made in, not, if that makes sense. So what I'm getting at is not made in America versus made in America. The quality, the gap is getting closed up. It's getting closer and closer. The material is getting closer and closer. And so it's all about supporting American jobs. And, there's no doubt in my mind we all love to do that, but we all have different budgets and different price points as well. Again, we're going to be talking with Ricky Brule. He works for, I just exactly said the name of the company, but he works for Vapor Trail Archery, and he's in the manufacturing world, right? And so he brings a little bit of that insight into this conversation. I asked some pretty complex questions that I don't even know the answers to. So that's why I ask him. Hopefully you guys enjoy today's episode. Before we get into today's episode, a real quick shout out to Code Blue Scents. It's that time of year where if you need real or synthetic deer urines, you need to be going to CodeBlueScents.com and checking out their entire lineup of real synthetic deer urines. They got scent elimination products. They have the Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit. So I would start ordering your mock scrape kits now, trying to get them out now so that if you can, get them out now. So then if you can get them out in the woods, let them soak for a week or two before you actually hunt, put a camera over top of it or put it within shooting range of a tree stand. That's the best option there. So CodeBlueScents.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is the Feed Hub. If you are able to run spin cast feeders, then the Feed Hub is a perfect solution for you guys. Long story short, the Feed Hub is a device that can connect to any spin cast feeder. You connect it to the Moultrie mobile app, and it allows you to remotely schedule your feeding times, check your inventory as far as how much feed you have left in your hopper, and basically on demand remote control of your feeder. And that allows you to be efficient, and you don't have to necessarily guess when you need to go out to your property to fill it back up again. Oh, and it allows you to use an unclog cycle. So go to MoultrieMole.com, check out the Feed Hub. Next on the list, you pair all of these, these all kind of fall into the same category, a Rope-A-Dope, a feeder, but you need a trail camera to monitor it as far as what deer are in the area. And I absolutely have fallen in love with the new 3.0 Reveal trail cameras by Tacticam. I'll tell you right now, man, it's... I love when products are like respond at a high, like they're high quality products. They're very functional, but in order to use them, they're very user friendly. So long story short, I open the package. I download the Reveal app, open the package, scan the QR codes, make sure there's batteries in it, of course, and you are ready to go. On some of these cameras, you do not even need a SD card. So go to Tacticam.com and check out all of the new 3.0 Reveal trail cameras. All right, ladies and gentlemen, those are the companies. Please do me a favor and go out and at least visit the websites, take a look at them, and maybe if they fall in your budget and if they fall within your needs, pick some stuff up and let them know that old Dan Johnson Nine Finger sent you. And that's it. Have a good day. Enjoy this episode where we talk about products that are made in America. All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today's guest, returning guest, Mr. Ricky Brule. Ricky, how are we doing, man?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Doing good.
Yeah, man.
Have you been in the woods?
I have not.
Not one time this year yet.
Not with a bow. Yeah, not with a bow, not with a gun, not hunting anything other than mushrooms or foraging or hiking around with my kid.
What are we supposed to talk about, dude?
This is the problem with working in this industry. We're too busy making sure everybody else is set up and ready to go. And then also on top of that, with my 4-year-old daughter, I'm basically just kind of waiting to cash in all my tokens for the right time. So I used to want to get the bug out and get out right away and stuff, and that's always nice. But again, just trying to put all my eggs in one basket and save it up for when the time is right. So
yeah, I feel you, man. I've been out zero times in Iowa. I did go on a week-long hunt in South Dakota where I was able to connect on my very first mule deer ever.
Yeah.
So I'm still extremely jacked about
that.
That's cool. Yep. And I got the head at a taxidermist right now getting a Euro mount done.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And so I'm looking forward. I got the spot on the wall picked out for him.
Perfect.
And I'm gonna hang him up, and I'm just going to stare at him for a day or something like that. So.
Yeah, Euros are cool. Yep, they're my favorite. I'm not sure if I'll do any more shoulder mounts. I mean, it would have to be a very, very special deer for me to do a shoulder, but Euros are always awesome. And good job out in South Dakota, man. That's fantastic. I'm glad you were able to make it happen.
Dude, so much time goes into that kind of hunt, especially, like, I'll be honest. I mean, if it didn't happen on this hunt, I was probably, I don't want to say I was going to give up, but I was really close to just being like, well, let's table mule deer hunting and let's go do something different, like whitetails in different states. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know, man. I don't know. I was getting frustrated. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad that I connected this year because I really needed it to mm-hmm. happen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's awesome. So, good job.
All right. When are you planning on getting out this year?
I'll probably get out here within the next couple of weeks just to kind of test the waters on some new ground that I have access to. And, again, haven't even been able to get out and scout it or do anything. It just kind of popped up at the last minute. And then just to kind of get my feet wet a little bit. And then the big trip is coming up, North Dakota. I got my anteater tag, so I'll be spending a little over a week out there just before Thanksgiving. And that should be a lot of fun. We're going to make a film out of it, so be a good time.
Oh, nice. Muleys or whitetail?
Well, both. Mostly I'm going to be targeting mule deer, but I oftentimes see good whitetails out there, so I won't hesitate to chase after one if I see it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm excited, dude. I'm excited for the next handful of weeks. Yeah. So this cold front, on the Nine Finger Chronicles, I talk a lot about this mid-October time frame. I talk about cold fronts. I've talked about that for however many years now, mm-hmm. and I like to just kind of leave it alone. However, today on my cell cams that I do have out, it wasn't a ton of like big mature buck daylight movement this morning, mm-hmm. but I did right before daylight today. The cold fronts, I mean, the mornings are cool now, but the afternoon is going to get a little warmer today.
Yeah.
We're going to get back up into the 70s. The cold front has passed through, but something about this morning, all of my trail cameras were popping this
nice.
Morning, and it got me, it was all before sunrise, but it got me started getting me fired up going, dude, it's close.
Yeah.
Like this, the day walkers are going to start coming here pretty soon. And that's what gets me fired up.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And that's one thing. You know, I get to live vicariously through a lot of people. I get, dozens of trail cam photos coming in from friends and family. And so it's pretty cool to see, all these bucks coming out on camera and then get, you know, get to see if they're able to make it happen towards the end of the year, or, you know, even then, like, you know, people get history with bucks, you know, year after year after year. So it's really cool to see, oh, this is that buck from last year. And then you get to kind of analyze what they look like then and how they produced, you know, this year and how much bigger they've gotten or if they're starting to go downhill. So, yeah. So even though I don't get too many opportunities to get out in the woods, I get to live vicariously through a lot of people.
You got to tell your boss, hey, I need some more tree stand time. Work that into your contract, man.
Well,
and I need some tree stand time.
Yeah. Well, that'll be the nice thing. 'Cause North Dakota, I will be able to, I'll be kind of working when I go to that, but yeah. It's never, the job has never really been too much of an issue, but it's more or less family stuff that, you know, yeah. And it's not a bad thing. I know I'll start getting out more once my daughter's getting a little bit older. So we're getting to that point. Yeah. We're right on the edge of me starting to get out more. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah. All right. Topic of the discussion today, and that is made in America versus everywhere else. All right. And I want to kind of set the stage here a little bit. Man, for as long as I can remember, really, I've had family members or friends or uncles or, you know, just like people talk shit on China-made products. Mm-hmm. All right. USA is number one. USA-made products are number one. I get it. And so that's the conversation that I want to have today is in 2024, is USA-made products still number one? And this is the conversation that I want to have today. And I just kind of want to kick it off to you. You work for a company that manufactures products in the United States. And, you know, I'm sure, and maybe you guys haven't, because maybe it's a goal, but I know some other companies within the hunting industry that used to be made in America, but now, because of cost savings, they go overseas or to Mexico or wherever it is that they go. Mm-hmm. And now the product maybe doesn't change, but where it's manufactured does. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I'm going to pass it to you. I want to get your thoughts on this topic.
Well, I think when we're talking about USA made, if you look at the actual definition of what it's required to say that your products are USA made, it's pretty loose. It's probably looser than most people even realize. And, you know, we're talking about USA made. So it's about semantics, right? Is it assembled in the USA? Is it machined in the USA? Is it, is it machined in China and then assembled in the USA? You know, so there's all these, you know, nuances that go with that term, right? But ultimately, I think, you know, the big thing, made in the USA, you know, we're supporting US jobs and all those kinds of things. So, you know, we take pride in that. You know, there are certain products that you have to outsource. Mm-hmm. Like with our stabilizer, Stokerize, it's a carbon tube that we use on a number of lines in our product line. And, you know, the company that we get those shafts from is stateside, but I don't know if they manufacture them stateside, if that makes any sense, you know.
Yeah.
I've been told, you know, that we're fools to think that everything is probably manufactured here. Just because you buy it from here doesn't necessarily mean that. Like our bowstrings, for example, the string fibers, we buy that from BCY. But some of those fibers come from, you know, foreign countries. But then they come over here, you know, it's a small percentage, but those fibers come over here, then it's spun up, they're twisted up here stateside, and then turned into a bowstring, then we assemble it, you know, here in our factory. So technically, by the definition of made in the USA, it is made in the USA. So that's the thing. I don't know, as far as, it's hard to say whether people really take a lot of pride in that. I mean, it's probably a good mix. You know, I'll have a lot of guys, they'll come into our pro shop and want us to match, you know, say a price on a pack of broadheads with something that they found on Amazon or something they found on eBay or something like that. And that's one of the problems, I think, with outsourcing manufacturing, is that you kind of lose control over, you know, the the copy, I guess. I don't know how to really term the right term for it, but you'll see a lot of these copycat broadheads that are sold on like Amazon, but they're just, you know, so you have a company stateside, and I'm using broadheads for an example because I think this is probably the, you know, one of the most things that are copied. Mm-hmm. You know, they outsource their manufacturing to another country. That manufacturer overproduces, and then they turn around and sell that product themselves online.
Yeah.
And they can sell it cheaper because they don't have to pay the FET tax, which is the, you know, which supports the Pittman-Robertson Act here stateside. So they can sell them cheaper. So anybody who's buying those products isn't supporting conservation in the States.
Gotcha. And so I'm looking up a definition here of what made in America means. Okay. The Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, defines made in the United States, USA, as a product that is either entirely or nearly entirely made in the United States, period.
Yeah.
So what's that mean? Mm-hmm. It either is or it isn't. Like, what is entirely mm-hmm. or nearly entirely?
Right.
Right. And so, when I was working for a company several years ago that made hand saws, and we put the USA sticker on our products, mm-hmm. right? It was assembled in the United States, and I believe some, like a piece of rope was made in the United States that went on it, but a majority of the other parts of it were from China, mm-hmm. right? And so because we assembled it here, and because the rope was made here, it was like, I believe it was like 51% of the parts, or it was over 50% of the parts were China, but the assembly counted for something.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able to put that sticker on there, even though a majority of the manufacturing came from overseas.
Yeah.
So, it is tricky to know, you know, like it, entirely. Mm-hmm. Now, Vapor Trail. Let's just use Vapor Trail as a 100% United States made, all parts, all assembled in the United States.
Yes.
Okay. So there you go. That's 100%. Mm-hmm. And now, do you feel as a manufacturer of a 100%, like even the little screws and adjustments, are they manufactured in the United States?
Is the hardware, yes. We have a local company that we get them from. I can't tell you 100% that they machine them and produce them here stateside.
Gotcha. Okay. But the rest of it,
yeah,
the assembly, all the plastic. And
yeah, the design of all the parts. I know that our, you know, some of our injection molded, you know, rubber over molded products, the company stateside that we have that makes those parts for us, I believe the molds were outsourced. Mm-hmm. The molds for those were outsourced and then shipped stateside. Other than that, everything else is, you know, produced right here in Wisconsin.
Just the mold though.
Yep.
Right. But then the mold goes out and then it comes back and then it's like all of the building of the product takes place here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Manufacturing.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. And I want to touch on like a point that you had mentioned too before is that, you know, I mean, I think it would be, you know, as a corporate or as a company, I guess, as a larger company in the industry, you know, we've obviously explored options. Right. You know, some of our engineers and stuff go, well, you should probably explore this option. And so we've had parts machined overseas just to see what the quality is like and see what the pricing is like and all that kind of stuff. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it's not a quality product. But we've only gotten, you know, samples and prototype stuff. And of course that stuff is always going to come, you know, top notch. Once you start mass producing, that's where you might run into some issues. But we just don't like the disconnect, right? Like where it feels like we have a little bit less control, during the mm-hmm. process where, you know, here we literally just go right down the road and we can watch our parts being machined.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. Stop waiting around for the perfect candidate. Instead, use Indeed sponsored jobs to find the right people with the right skills fast. It's a simple way to make sure your listing is the first candidates see. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs have 4 times more applicants than non-sponsored jobs. So go build your dream team today with Indeed. Get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
And so that's the big thing. And then lead times is huge too. You know, you really got to be preemptive about, you know, when you're going to order, because things take months to get when you're outsourcing. So,
right. And I was talking to, you know, I've talked with tons of people on this podcast about their manufacturing practices. And I think, one of the guys who built their, I believe it's a bow company. I forget. Anyway, the point of the conversation I had with them is research and development. He's able to take a prototype and like mess around with a prototype, doesn't like it, make changes to that prototype. And instead of having to email instructions and send it to someone who lives in China, you know, they fiddle with it, they send it back, you know, they send a prototype back, and you have this time there that it almost feels wasted if you're like a go-getter who really wants this prototype to be done and, you know, done it. And you're bouncing back and forth a lot. But having all of that, like a machining, all the machining that's done stateside, and like a R&D lab and all that stuff where you can take a prototype, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 until it's completed. And you can do that in a matter of weeks or months instead of sometimes years it takes for these prototypes to get to a point where they become sellable.
Yeah.
And the creator of that or the company is happy with what is being manufactured. So I've talked to guys who do that, but then also the company that I worked with, they basically did the design, the CAD design. They sent it over. They did it, you know, and then there would be some burrs or something in the aluminum or the metal or the steel or whatever it was. We sent it back, say, hey, here's this problem. I don't like it. Change it. They change it. And it just goes back and forth. And it took a year or more for that, from the creation or the idea to get it out, versus the, I can do this right now. I'm going to build it right now. And then I'm going to sell it next month. Type of deal. So benefits of having all of your stuff in house as well.
Yeah. And in this industry too, it's everything's so fast moving. People want to see something new every year, you know? And so that, it, you know, in some industries that might work, but in this one, not, it doesn't work as well. And I guess it just depends, you know, you've got some bigger companies out there that, I don't want to mention any names, but you've got some larger companies within the outdoor industry that, or in archery specifically, they can outsource their products. But they, you know, they have the capacity and the ability to do so, where they can plan far enough ahead. They've got a big enough crew. So excuse me.
Yeah. I had a, company, once tell me that, they already have their next 4 bows completed and ready to go for the next however many years. Like it's done, design is done, it's just a matter of implementing it now.
Right
And so design has been, the design's done, the engineering's done, and but at some point I look at that and I'm like, okay, especially in the archery industry, right? Archery is really fatty, does, if that makes sense. It's like, oh, I want to, because there was a while there we went short axle to axle. All right. There was a while there where we had long or really light arrows. Now we're going trending heavy. Now we're trending high, longer axle to axle. Now we're trending, saddles and light and all this stuff. And I just would be afraid, if I was a manufacturer, to go too far in advance and then the product that you've designed doesn't match the trend of the end user.
Right.
Do you guys ever have, like, do you guys ever do that, or are you guys kind of, do you keep that time frame shorter?
Well, I think, I don't know, our products aren't subject to a lot of that quite as much. You know what I mean? Like, there's not a lot of fluctuation in how, you know, arrow rest design functions or bowstring designs. Excuse me.
Coughing spell. Oh, going man. Bananas.
Oh, I've been sick for a week, so sorry.
Oh, it's all good. It's all good.
But yeah, when it comes to bows, you know, it is funny. I've had this conversation on a couple different podcasts in the last month about the short bow fad and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I've never really kind of strayed away from, I've always liked a longer axle to axle bow. And I'm not saying that it's wrong to want a short axle to axle. I get the reasons why people want it. But yeah, it is very, it is very faddy, and it's amazing how, you know, digital creators and influencers play a role in that.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
well, they're getting told what to do.
Yeah.
They're getting told, hey, if you want to continue this relationship, here's what we want you to promote. Mm-hmm.
I think to a certain degree, I think there are some guys out there that have enough clout where they can kind of, you know, convince a company to go in a certain direction.
Right.
And then there's like, you know, big names out there like Dan Johnson, who, when they tell you about an October lull, like, dude, you just sit around, man. Don't go out. There's no point.
Yep. Dan Johnson, huge influencer, huge influencer. I couldn't influence a person to go make a sandwich. I bet.
I disagree, but
Okay. So I want to talk about that end user and because, man, in this world that we live in today, I really do feel that price reflects quality, okay? But in the world that we live in today, prices are high as shit right now, okay? And so in your experience, like, do people care? Like, if the price is high and it's made in America, do people care that it is even made in America if they can get the same thing made in China at a cheaper price?
It's hard to say that for sure. The only thing I can really, again, speak to that is in regards to our pro shop. When we have people come in and they want us to match certain prices, when it comes to our products, obviously, you know, it used to be really heavy on, you know, a majority of archers were probably looking, you know, at a more reasonable price. But it's kind of shifting. I think that percentage is changing a little bit. We're getting more and more people. I mean, it's shocking when we manufacture an arrow rest and then we look at our cost. We calculate our dealer cost and we calculate our MSRP. And it's like, man, I don't know if people would pay that kind of money, but you know, it's a great product, and so we'll see. And people, they eat it up. So,
yeah.
You know, Dialed is a perfect example of that too. I'm back.
He's back.
I mean, their new site is $560.
Yeah.
And they're selling out. They can't keep them in stock. So, you know, I think it still kind of goes both ways. I still think it's important to have a product that's at a better price point.
Yeah.
Because a majority of people out there probably aren't too concerned about having all this technology involved. So
let's talk about that for a second. Is it in fact, like you said, Dialed, it's on the very high end of, you know, of the price point for a site. Okay. You said they're selling out, right? But where was I going with this? I was trying to see, like, is Dialed made? They're obviously made in America,
yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So somebody out there is buying it. But I don't, like, if I had to guess, they may be selling out, but the volume that they're selling compared to, I don't know, what's another company, but they're manufactured in China with a higher, that probably has a cheaper price point that probably sells higher volume.
Hmm. And we're talking about a site company specifically?
Yeah, a site company.
Ooh, gosh, I don't even know.
Probably Trophy Ridge.
That was the first thing. That was one of the top ones on the top of my head, but I can't verify that 100%. But
yeah, so Trophy Ridge, I have one. I don't think they're made in America. And so I can go check real quick.
Yeah, I'm checking.
Okay, you're checking. Mm-hmm. But I look at that because they're a conglomerate, right? So they're owned by what company? Because Trophy Ridge is owned by the same company that owns Bear and a couple other brands. Mm-hmm. And so when a company like, let's for example, say Faradine starts to get a hold of these companies, these holding companies now of all these brands are looking for one thing. I don't want to say just one thing, but there has to be a cost benefit, right? And so I'm just going to say this out loud because this is where I was the most frustrated. When I used to have Ripcord arrow rests on my bow, dude, I love the brand. I love the company. The product, I love the people that worked there. And then it was sold to one of those holding companies. My personal opinion, I felt like the product started to suffer. And that's when I actually jumped on and kind of, I think that's when we started talking a long time. You're like, dude, just let me send you a Vapor Trail. Mm-hmm. I might have even bought my first Vapor Trail rest. But then I was back to being satisfied again. And I'm not 100% sure why, but something happened to where that product lost my confidence. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together because I was like, okay, well, something, it's not the same company mm-hmm. anymore. It's owned by somebody who probably doesn't care too much about it other than the numbers of sales that they're reaching. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of stuff turns me off, whether it's made in America or not.
Yeah. To your point, we just signed on with a rep group and, so we're talking about, you know, other companies that they repped in the past, whatever. And I think Trophy Takers is one of them. You know, when Dan Evans, sold Trophy Taker, and I think it was, I can't remember the group that bought them. But they also own Obsession Bows and all that kind of stuff. And they started outsourcing product and that hurt them big time.
Yeah.
Whether it was a quality issue or not, I don't know. I think a lot of people, they immediately just assume that there's going to be problems. And yeah. I think the biggest thing is relationships, right?
Right.
Ripcord, Keith Dvorsniak, he was the guy, right? Like he was your guy.
That's the guy.
And
yes.
And they let him when Pure Archery came in, bought them, they let him go. They came in, bought Tight Spot. They let Joe Jacks go. They, you know, that I think hurts sales, not 100% because of the product quality, but because of the relationships that people have, long standing relationships that people have. And so I think that's a big thing. And maybe that was the case, you know, for you with Ripcord. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. We always had a really good relationship with Keith, and when we would be at like a trade show or something like that, he would always tell everybody, "Vapor Trail makes the best limb driven rest, and Ripcord makes the best cable driven rest." That's what he would always tell everybody. Until, yeah. Of course, they made their own limb driven. But you know, either way, to us, that's a compliment, right? If somebody else wants to utilize that technology. That's amazing. That tells us that we're doing it right. And, but I think that's a big thing for a lot of people too.
Hey, it's Sterling K. Brown from the Hulu original series Paradise. The next chapter begins as Xavier's search for his wife takes him above ground, and what he finds will change everything. It was never just about the bunker. Tune in and discover the truth lies outside. Paradise, the official podcast, is now streaming. And stream Paradise Season 2 on February 23rd on Hulu and Hulu on Disney Plus.
Yeah. I look at it something like this. I go, in today's world, it's hard because, you know, the price of everything's going up, but income isn't necessarily going up to match the rising cost, a.k.a. inflation, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so I look at something like this, and I'm lucky. I shouldn't even be having this conversation because I get a lot of product for free just because of what I've built over here, mm-hmm. the podcast, the network, my connections and friends in the industry,
right.
that kind of stuff. Meanwhile, the average Joe's paying full retail price on a lot of these products. But stepping outside of the hunting industry for a second, there are products that I used to buy that I no longer buy because they have exceeded my budget in whether that's groceries or things like that. Mm-hmm. And so I think in today's world, obviously, Dialed is doing something right where they can charge $500 for a site. Mm-hmm. And it's 100% made in America too, right?
Yeah. And it's an amazing right? site. I mean, it really is, you know, it's got for the guy that wants all those features. And I happen to be one of those guys, like, then, you know, then you're going to pay the money, you know, and especially when you, I mean, you know, the cost and the time and everything that goes into a Western hunt. And so it's easy to justify that cost.
Right. Right. At the same time of, I'm talking out of one side of my mouth for my hobby of hunting. Like, there's certain things around the house here that I'm just like, screw it. I'm going as cheap as possible.
Yeah.
But for my hunting and my hobby and the thing that I spend the most time doing, mm-hmm. I am the guy who's like, buy once, cry once.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
And honestly, I do look for whether or not it is made in America, but it's not the deciding factor.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think price for me in my world is still the deciding factor. And I'm guessing it is for most people, right? There are people out there who are like, dude, only America. I'm going to do this only in America. But then they go to the grocery store or to Walmart and buy something that's made in China, mm-hmm. right? What are you going to do? Not everything is going to be manufactured in the United States.
Right.
But my gut tells me that price does reflect quality, and you can go and buy something cheap that from China just to get by, or you can buy something made in America that is going to last you for a very long time, mm-hmm. right? There's that way to look at it.
Sure.
Now, the next question I have is, just because something is made in America or made in China, do you feel that is instantly categorized as junk, or can it still be quality?
Yeah, like I said before, not necessarily. I mean, we've had some parts, you know, some prototype stuff done over there. They came in and the parts were just as good as, you know, what we could get here. You know, the only thing we didn't do is, like, you know, cut the part in half to see how what the grains of the material, you know, if the material was the same quality or not. But I would say fit and finish, everything was great on some of those parts. And so I don't think that's necessarily the case, but I also think,
what about functionality?
Function, I suppose it could be, you know, if you've got a product that has a lot of moving parts and you don't have that control, it, you know, assembly is one thing too, right? So I would definitely want to make sure that it's being assembled stateside, you know, like with our products here as a perfect example, like, you need the touch of a hand to make sure that those products are being assembled properly. There's springs, there's all kinds of moving parts in there to make sure that all the tolerances and everything is good and tight. So there could be that. But I it's hard for me to really give you a definitive answer to that, because I don't use a lot of products. I mean, inherently I'm sure that I do, but when it comes to my archery gear, I believe a majority of it is made here stateside.
Okay. What about Q&A? Do you think quality control is better in the United States than in China or overseas or wherever else it's manufactured?
I mean, that's kind of a broad question, because, you know, Q&A, or, you know, I guess that sort of thing is, you know, I know a lot of it when it comes to the machining of parts, you know, they use, you know, computers and cameras and devices to, you know, measure tolerances and do all that kind of stuff to get mm-hmm. through their process. So, I can't imagine it would be any less quality overseas than it would be here. And, you know, I guess if we're talking about, well, never mind. At first I was thinking you were talking about R&D. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. The other thing is, you know, what's cool is I opened up a pair of binoculars for kids that I got from Vortex.
Mm-hmm.
In that package, this was way early in the summer, in that box, there was a little card, and it had inspected by, and then like initials, and it was just this big. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, I looked at that and I go, "Boy, that's settled. That settled any question I had about this product." Mm-hmm. And I've seen it on certain bow manufacturers too.
Yeah,
like I believe it was the last Bowtech that I got in the box. It had quality control or like some kind of sticker or paper on it where it was initialed by somebody mm-hmm. who worked on the line or was part of their quality control group. Now, I'm sure not every single product for every single company gets touched by Q&A, but when I worked in the world of manufacturing, it was like one out of every 50 or one every hour on the line got pulled out. I did a test on it and then, you know, checked yes or no. Mm-hmm. If there was a defect, then we stopped production. We tested a couple before and a couple after to make sure it wasn't just a one-off we needed to shut the line down and go through all these. The one that I can remember was when I worked for a fireplace company that created pipes mm-hmm. that would go through your house or whatever.
Yeah.
And the spot welds on them were starting to get bad. Something there were, the automatic machine wasn't working right. And long story short, we had to unbox like 500 pieces of pipe.
Oh, my gosh.
And then go back and re-spot weld all these pieces of pipe. So, but that's what they do when it's made in America. Sometimes that stuff overseas, they're just like, screw it, we need to get it out, and it gets missed. And I think that's where people start to go, well, that's made in China. Let me ask you this question. Why do you think certain people get so fired up when they find out something is made in a different country? Is it a bad experience?
I suppose it could be. It could be, you know, I feel like there's some people I know too that are just very patriotic and, mm-hmm. you know, there's that part of it, or maybe they just don't want to be supporting another country for whatever reason. So that could be a huge part of it too, I guess. And again, I think some of it too is just that disconnect. Like while you were talking, I did the research on Trophy Ridge and they were bought out by Escalade Sports. And so that's a very huge corporation that owns a lot of different companies. And so, you know, a lot of their products have been manufactured overseas for the better part of a decade, or at least that's what I read online. So who knows, you know, but, yeah. But I guess the point that I'm trying to make too, is that again, there's kind of that disconnect where you don't have, you know, the communication there's a communication gap there between the manufacturer and who's actually assembling and who's actually selling the product. And so that, you know, adds to the moving parts and could create problems.
Yeah. So I'm not going to say the brand name, but I bet you're going to be able to guess it. Oh, several years ago, new company came out. Okay. Just tons of money was thrown into the branding. And it was just, it went from startup to boom, one of the most popular, most recognized brands in the entire hunting space. And we're talking every single hunting celebrity, every single, I don't know, this was when they came out, it was a little bit before the influencer type stage of life.
Okay.
But you get what I'm saying. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But then you start to hear these rumors that pop up. Yeah, the company's popular, it's big, but then you start hearing the functionality fail. And then you start hearing people say, well, where are these manufactured? And then you start to hear, oh my God, they're manufactured in China. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you start to do, like, I had a buddy talk to me one time about the math, right? The math. And he's like, dude, there's a, like, it then becomes a cost analysis. Like, it's more branding than it is material. And the product is junk. It's made cheaply. But the branding of it is what causes the price to go up because everybody wants it because it's very popular, supply and demand,
yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so then over time, though, people start to say, oh, my God, what is wrong with what's wrong with this product? And long story short, what you have is this product that is not as popular as it used to be.
Yeah, I'm just racking my brain over here trying to think of who, you know, the company that you might be talking about. And but it certainly
does. It's a broadhead company. I'll say it. Okay. It's a broadhead company.
Okay, okay. Well, I mean, it certainly is, you know, there's proof out there that it can be an issue. You know, I think a good example that I like to use is Lone Wolf Tree Stands. I know that at one point they went overseas and they actually came back because of the issues. And that was like, I remember the ATA show where they came back and it was just like plastered all over their booth. It was like, we're back, made in the USA, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And so I think there is part of that too. I think you got to be responsible and vetting out the proper manufacturer to make sure that they're going to build you a quality product, you know? And I think, yeah, you could probably get something dirt cheap, you know, for cost and then, you know, increase your, you know, lower your bottom line, increase your profits. But in the end, it's going to hurt you bad. You know, never going to be a good thing. And going back to what you were saying before, I think there probably is some quality stuff coming from other countries. It just, I think it's on the responsibility of the company to make sure they're vetting out these manufacturers and these machinists to make sure they're building a good product.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about stereotypes a second, right? And I'm my brain is going, so I'm going to say it.
Yeah.
Okay. What demographic do you think are the people who are hunters? Tell me a demographic that pops into your head.
Ask the question one more time.
The demographic that if you were to, I don't know, like, what is the demographic, the average demographic of the North American hunter?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, male, you know, probably 25 to 45.
Okay. White?
Yes.
Majority white?
Yep.
White male? Mm-hmm. Okay. That age group? Okay. And so then I start to, you know, and again, this is a stereotype. This, like, I don't want people to go up in arms. Well, I'm Hispanic and I hunt. Mm-hmm. Don't, you know, you're wrong. You know, like, that's not the point of this. Mm-hmm. The point is I'm looking at, and I'm not, and we can even take race out of it. We can say men, right? Men ages 25 to 45. But do you think that men ages 45 to, or 25 to 45, when it comes to buying gear for hunting, are more or less critical about the performance of that product that they buy?
Man, it's a pretty good mix. I mean, I think a majority of, and I'm going to speak about archers specifically, I think a majority of hunters are probably, you know, climbing up into a tree, probably not taking shots further than 40 yards. You know, weekend warrior at best when it comes to even shooting. I mean, there's people I know that I've talked to that even I would suspect, you know, that they have a lot of success in the woods. And I've had guys say, man, I haven't tuned my bow in 3 years. And I'm like, what, are you kidding me? Like, you don't even, they're just like, I don't know, I take it out, shoot it. It's hitting at the target. So I'm good to go. And I'm just like, okay. So to me, that speaks to somebody who's not critical about how their bow is performing or how well their equipment's going to perform. You know, Whisker biscuits are great. That's probably, you know, arguably one of the most popular arrow rests on the market. And it's simple. You know, I mean, I know guys that can shoot distance with them accurately, but again, you know, it's a very simple product, doesn't have a lot of moving parts, it's not expensive, you know, that kind of thing. So I think there's a good mix, but I think majority of archers are in that area where they're not super concerned about you know, a lot of bells and whistles and a high performing product. They just want something that's going to get the job done.
Yeah, you're probably right. I think I have a skewed or maybe a misconception of that because of the people who I talk to on a daily basis. And again, where I'm at and what I do, I talk to serious guys the most, right? Guys who are spending multiple days afield, like multiple weeks in the field chasing animals, mm-hmm. right? People who are serious and that kind of stuff. But then no dig at my stepdad, but my stepdad is that guy who he will pull his bow out 2 weeks before season opener and shoots the same bow in the same gear, the same arrows for however many years until they break enough to where he needs to go out and buy new ones. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he fills his tag with whatever it is he fills it with, and then he puts it back in the case, and then it's there for 340 more days until, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. And so, I would have to agree with you on that. So yeah, and that, you know, we've kind of come full circle here in this conversation where it blows my mind that a company like Dialed is as successful as they are with the price point that they have in a world, you know, where the quote unquote average guy just wants to go out and hunt a little bit, right?
Yeah. And, you know, we talk about this from time to time here too, is do you want to, you know, cause they're probably not selling the same volume as a company, right, like say Faradine is, but their profit margins are probably a little bit higher. And they don't have to have near as big a warehouse. They don't have to have a giant crew. You know, it's a very small, well, I don't want to say small, but it's relatively speaking, you know, I've been to their HQ and it's a tight little operation, and it's very well organized. And, you know, the guys that run it, they don't have to manage a ton of people. You know, they have an in-house marketing agency, so they can do everything right there where they need it. And so I think, you know, it's a matter of, you know, these guys, they're family guys. They just need to make enough money to live and support their families, and that's it. And there isn't this like entrepreneurial idea of, you know, scooping up a company and then just having a bunch of other people run it, and then, you know, you can go on vacation and just kind of do whatever you want to do and manage the company from afar. You know, they're in it,
right?
And they're doing it. And I think that's a huge part. You know, people see the lifestyle stuff that they're doing. Their marketing is spot on. And it's not like you're saying with some other companies where they dump a ton of money into their branding and marketing, but they make a crappy product, you know. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt, you know, Dialed is a new company, and they're still kind of in their infancy, and they've had their fair share of, you know, problems here and there, but they're quick to solve them. They're quick to get on top of them and then fix it. So the customer service part is there too.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's huge. Yep. Customer service is huge. Mm-hmm. That's a tipping point for me big time. 80-20 rule in the hunting industry. Do you feel that 20% of the people who participate in purchasing hunting gear and equipment are responsible for 80% of the revenue?
Ooh, man, these are tough questions. Cause there's a lot of, you know, ins and outs when it comes to that, but
yeah, all loaded questions today.
I don't think so. I think I think it's a majority. Like I said, you know, there's so many archers, there's so many hunters that, you know, they're not, for lack of a better word, like you were saying, we're immersed in like this more kind of elite, I guess, status of archers, right? Mm-hmm. And so those people who maybe wouldn't be lumped into that, I think that they provide a majority of the revenue for the industry, because they're, you know, again, they're probably buying just by sheer number, there's more people buying these products, and maybe the profit margins aren't as high, but they're, you know, there's just more quantity as opposed to quality.
Yeah. Okay. That's one way to look at it. I was thinking of it. It's like, one guy buys a full setup of Sitka for like $3,000 as opposed to 10 people or, you know, 8 people going to Walmart and buying some licensed Realtree or Mossy Oak off the shelf there for a total of $3,000. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, it's tough. You could be right too. I don't know. I can't really put my thumb on that.
Hey, this podcast, if you haven't listened to it before, is there's no experts. It's just two dudes talking about hunting gear and equipment, right?
So, well, I'm an expert, but no, I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah. You. Well, you work in the manufacturing world, so that's why you're here today, dude. That's why you're here today. So is there any other parts of this conversation that we did not touch on or hit today as far as Made in America versus anywhere else, quality, lead times, customer service, anything like that?
One thing that my mind kept going back to is I think a big part of the price too is warranty. And we did talk a little bit about customer service, but I think, you know, that if you have a good solid warranty, you have to factor that into your cost, right? Because things happen, right? And if you want to have a rock solid warranty, no questions asked kind of deal, that's where you have to factor in even a little bit more, because even though it might be at fault of the customer, it's not maybe not specifically a manufactured defect. You still want to provide the best customer service you can. And that always creates a great opportunity to create a customer for life. And I'll use like our bowstrings, for example. There's a lot of things that can happen with a set of bowstrings in between when we get finished building them. They go to the mail, they get to the dealer puts it on the customer's bow, they take it out and shoot it. And so there's a lot of cases where it'd be really difficult for us to determine whether it's a manufacturer defect. I would say, you know, but if we have a customer coming at us and they say, hey, look, this string is fraying, and they send a picture of it, and it, to me, being in this business as long as I have, I can tell the difference between whether fibers are actually breaking apart or if somebody had a broadhead bouncing around in their bow case and their broadhead cut the string, right? But it's difficult to explain to a customer that that is probably what happened. And in those cases, you just say, yeah, hey, guess what? This is what it looks like. You know, if you've got your arrows in your bow case with some broadheads in there, you know, you might want to be careful with that. I don't know if that's what's going on, but, you know, try to educate them a little bit, but at the same time, always just take care of them. And so we have to eat that. You know what I mean? We have to eat the labor. We have to eat the material costs, the shipping, everything to make sure we take care of that customer. And so you have to factor that into your pricing as well.
Yeah. And is what it is at that point. You're like, you don't want to piss a customer off and lose a customer. And then that guy goes and tells 10, 15 of his friends. And now those people are now not buying. Like, unhappy customers do a lot more damage than what companies think, right? There's no cost analysis that can be calculated because a customer's feelings got hurt.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And so, the cost associated with taking care of them usually is, you know,
minuscule.
It's minuscule compared to the business that you could generate from, you know, having that guy now go to your website, leave a review saying, hey, I had a problem. They took care of it. They're great. You know, they had a new set out to me or a new string out to me within a couple of days, and I was up and running. And of course, there's people I've absolutely bent over backwards for, and they're still not happy. And you're always going to have those people. But
Right. Well, great conversation today. Did we solve the world's problems? No, probably not. Nonetheless, great conversation, Rick, man. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and BS with us a little bit. Go hunting, dude.
Yes.
Go out hunting.
Yes.
We got to get you out in the hunting woods. And then you can come back on and tell us of all the giants you slayed this year.
Oh yeah. There's definitely a giant in the future without a doubt coming up here soon. All right. We'll definitely have a talk about that. And thanks for having me on. I always appreciate it. These conversations are always fun. You ask the most challenging questions and I'm always like kind of stumped, you know, and I don't know if my answer is, even good if I'm just like, you know, throwing the Biden at you and giving you a bunch of BS, but trying to answer the question as best I can. So I do appreciate that, though. It is fun to chat with you.
Have you seen the movie Old School with Will Ferrell and Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson?
Maybe only 100 times.
Yeah, okay. So you know, right? There's a point where they're in a debate. And Will Ferrell goes on this very elaborate speech, right? And then the guy who is like the moderator judge. He's like, at any point in your rambling, you made zero sense. You are awarded a zero. It's like, what happened? I blacked out. That is how I feel doing this podcast sometimes. Like, did that question make sense or did I tank it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's nice because what am I going on now? I'm going on almost little over 100 podcasts that I've done now. And I've, in the beginning, I would just try to, now I've learned it's just like, no, you know what, just take a second and get some clarification on the question. So you're actually answering it properly, you know?
Exactly. Hey, I would not be offended if you said, hey dude, that's the stupidest question I've ever been answered in over 100 podcasts that I've been on. And then I would just slowly go, oh, I'm disconnecting, and I'd be embarrassed and I'd shut the podcast down.
Yeah, likewise.
All right, dude. Hey, good luck the rest of the season.
Thanks, man. You too.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.